evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 6th, 2015. A top U.S. diplomat says the South Sudan government and the rebels have no excuse for delaying the implementation of the IGAD brokered peace deal.
Both sides in this conflict seem to have no trouble finding the money to fight for almost 20 months. And so it's a little bit incredulous that now suddenly that they've agreed to make peace, that they find they have absolutely no money to try to implement the peace agreement.
And the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission arrives in Juba with a message of peace.
Peace unto you, even though I've not Jesus Christ. Peace, because with peace, everybody is a winner. But at the personal level, I'm absolutely delighted to be here this afternoon.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan says the two warring parties in South Sudan's conflict are responsible for implementing the IGAD brokered peace deal signed in August by rebel leader Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir. Donald Booth says the implementation of the deal depends on the willingness of the warring parties to fulfill their promise of restoring peace in the country. Booth says he is surprised to hear that the rebels and the government are asking the international community for financial help to implement the peace deal. The senior U.S. diplomat says the Kiir administration and the rebels of the SPLM in opposition have no excuse for delaying the implementation of the IGAD brokered peace deal they signed in August.
We have already funded a number of activities, for example, the workshops that were held in Addis to work out the security arrangements. We have been funding the monitoring and verification mechanism. We've been the major donor for that, and will continue to support as that transitions into the CTSAM, the ceasefire monitoring mechanism. We also have been supportive of other activities, including the establishment of the Constitutional Amendment Commission. We're prepared to support that. We're prepared to support other activities as the peace agreement is actually implemented by the South Sudanese. But this is the critical point. The South Sudanese are the ones who have to implement their own peace agreement. Their international partners can only be there to help. And so as we have made clear to both the government and the opposition, the more that they do to implement the agreement, the greater the support they're going to find from their international partners.
And one key point that both the government and the rebels have been talking about is the demilitarization of Juba. They are saying that, yes, they will take the soldiers outside Juba, but they don't have money for tents, they don't have money for food, they don't have money for building health centers for these soldiers. Is the IGAD Plus and its partners thinking about helping in that regard?
Well, let me just make one point, and I think people need to keep this in mind. Both sides in this conflict seem to have no trouble finding the money to fight for almost 20 months. And so it's a little bit incredulous that now suddenly that they've agreed to make peace, that they find they have absolutely no money to try to implement the peace agreement. We certainly are looking for them to do whatever they can to make progress on implementing this agreement. Secondly, I think we have to be realistic. A lot of the soldiers on both sides have been in very makeshift accommodations for a long time. And I think it's unrealistic to expect that there would be a major change in that. The expectation of going to cantonment sites outside of Juba for those forces that they did not agree that will remain in Juba is something that should be carried out. And there are a number of facilities that have already been built with outside assistance over the past years that could be possible sites where they could be deployed to.
What is your assessment of the commitments of the two warring parties, the government and the rebels, so far since the peace agreement was signed on August 17 and August 26 by President Kiir in Juba? What is your assessment of their commitment?
There have been obviously some delays in the implementation timelines that were in the agreement. I think this reflects the fact that some of the issues that have had to have been resolved were not themselves resolved in the peace agreement. So, for example, the security arrangements for Juba were to be decided by the follow-on workshop. They have worked at that. They've come to an agreement on it. We're pleased that they've come to an agreement on it. And we think it's now time to quickly move forward and implement that. We also believe that it's important that other elements, such as the constitutional amendment process, get underway. that the joint military command be established, that the joint operations center become established, so that the process of separating forces, contoning forces, which is going to be critical to putting an end to the fighting, can proceed.
Some analysts in the region are saying that what the government is saying is a reality on the ground, because the country has been struggling with the economic crisis, and it looks like their reserves have dried long time ago. Don't you think this is an opportune time for them to call for help from outside?
Well, there are a number of reforms that could be undertaken that would alleviate some of the economic problems they've had. These have been discussed with the International Monetary Fund and others for many, many months. These reforms could go forward now and would help alleviate the economic situation. It's a matter of political will to take those steps. As I said, it's they found money to fight, and they can find some money to help implement this peace agreement. And the more they do to implement this agreement, the more support that they will get from their international partners.
When I was in Addis, I spoke with both the highest leadership from the SPLM in opposition and also speaking to government officials from Juba. I came out with the impression that both of them are saying they were forced to sign this agreement. And looks like they are saying, since you forced us, now it's your turn to give us money to implement it.
The parties negotiated for close to 20 months. And the draft peace agreement that was presented to them was something that they were given an opportunity to make changes to. They made changes to certain parts of it. And at the end of the day, they signed that. They made that decision. One would think that they had the best interests of the people of South Sudan in mind when they signed to try to bring peace back to the country. Again, the international community cannot implement the peace agreement. South Sudanese need to be the ones to implement the peace agreement.
That's Donald Wood, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to me earlier today at the U.S. Department of State here in Washington. The Office of the Special Envoy provides funds for this program. But the Information Minister for Government of South Sudan does not see it that way. Yesterday, Michael Makuei said South Sudan and the rebels of the SPLM in opposition need financial help from the international community to implement the peace deal. Today, Makuei says the government is drafting a budget to determine exactly how much money is needed for establishing institutions that will help in the implementation of the peace deal. VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa has more.
Makuei says funding of the implementation of the agreement is a process. But as of now, the government does not have the money to fund security arrangements and other provisions in the agreement.
The Minister of Finance is now working on the peace budget, because it is only after getting that budget that we'll be now in a position to say, yes, this is the amount we need and this is what we are able to collect.
Asked how the government intends to fund the creation of 28 states out of the current 10 states, Makuei says that has nothing to do with funding of this peace deal.
The number of the members of the parliament, they will be divided up. They will go back to their respective states. And then they will, any state where the number, their representatives are less than 21, then they will be increased to 21.
He says the government of South Sudan needs financial support from the international community to implement the peace deal signed by the leaders of both sides in August. He added that both the government and the SPLA in opposition are calling on the IGAD Plus countries who blocked the agreement to support its implementation.
So we are in their need of resources so that we can implement this agreement. This is why we are saying, requesting the international community, the friends of South Sudan, and we are asking them to come for our rescue so that we can implement the agreement.
Yesterday, Makuei told reporters in Juba that the country does not have the money to implement the peace deal on its own. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
As Michael Makuei complains about who will provide funds for the implementation of the IGAD brokered peace deal, the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission arrived in Juba last night. Festus Gotobanye Mugai, who is also the former president of Botswana, says he plans to meet President Salva Kiir as well as all the other stakeholders to the peace agreement while in the capital. As Philip Tona Leo reports for VOA from Juba, Mogae is calling on all South Sudanese to embrace peace.
As he arrived at Juba International Airport, Mogae had this message for the people of South Sudan.
My greeting is peace unto you, even though I'm not Jesus Christ. Peace, because with peace, everybody is a winner. But at the personal level, I'm absolutely delighted to be here this afternoon. Excited to see everybody here. And surprised that it's much cooler than I expected it would be. I knew that it's always wet and green and beautiful. I always eye it with envy because I come from a desert country.
Mogae says he will hold talks with President Kiir and members of his administration to learn more about South Sudan from all the stakeholders to the peace agreement.
I'll be doing a lot of listening. After all of you live in this country, are here, and therefore it's in the logic of circumstance that in my interactions with everybody here is first to listen.
The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, was established under Chapter 7 of the Peace Agreement and is responsible for overseeing and monitoring aspects of the implementation of the peace deal, which was signed by President Kiir and Machar in August. JMEC will also monitor the permanent ceasefire between the government and the SPLM in opposition. According to the peace agreement, JMEC shall comprise representatives of the parties to the agreement, other South Sudanese stakeholders, and regional and international grantors and partners of South Sudan. That includes 6 members of the parties to the agreement, 2 representatives of the government of South Sudan, 2 from the SPLA-MIO, 1 from the former detainees, 1 from other South Sudan political party, 7 from other South Sudanese stakeholders, and 2 from faith-based leaders, among others. Peter Bashir Bandi, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, says the government will cooperate with Mogae. Bandi directly addressed Mogae upon his arrival at the airport.
You have been tasked with the responsibility. We trust and we know your country, yes, that you headed was a success story. And I think your choice was not by accident. Your choice will enrich the peace that we are yearning to have in this South Sudan. I want to assure you that you are most welcome and you will receive each and every cooperation from our people.
Thank you.
And I hope that you will lead this country to real tranquility and peace.
Bandi says Mogae will visit IGAD member countries that helped broker the peace deal. He says Mogae will then return to Juba for the inauguration of the JMEC office on November 18th. For BOA News, I am Philip Tona Leo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, 3 foreign nationals are deported for allegedly hiding fuel. That story is when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you celebrate your birthday?
I'm one who have not celebrated my birthday since I was born, just because I did not know. I was not properly told when I was born, and I'm up to now. I still guess my age.
By grabbing a bottle of soda and sit on my table, enjoy and let people know that today is my day.
I celebrate my birthday alone. Nothing I take. I don't do anything.
My birthday, I celebrate it so cool because, you know, even today is my birthday. So it's too cool because I'm leaving the school. I'm going to home. I'm going to celebrate with my family and some of my friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state capital, Wau, have expelled 3 foreign fuel station managers accused of hiding fuel. They say the 3 all Somali nationals have been accused of keeping their fuel stations closed for several days in order to increase the price of petrol. Officials say police officers caught the 3 selling fuel to people who plan to sell it at the black market price. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Wau municipal authorities gave the 3 businessmen 24 hours to leave and banned them from directly engaging in any business in the Wau area in the future. The three are named businessmen were managers of Petro City, Runway, and Ebony filling stations. Wau Mayor Elia Camilo Dimo says the three fuel dealers were arrested with more than 60 barrels of fuel destined to be sold on the black market.
They violated our regulations and law. That's why we are deporting them from Wau Municipal Council. Let them go back to Juba or wherever their embassies are there, but we don't want them here.
Camilo says two South Sudanese who were arrested along with the Somali nationals will be tried in the municipal emergency court. If found guilty, they will be sentenced to up to 2 years in prison in accordance with municipal bylaws. Fuel stations that had been selling petrol at £18 per litre over the last 2 weeks have closed down. As of today, a litre of petrol or diesel costs 200 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Motorcycle taxi, locally known as Boda Boda, are hardly seen on the streets anymore due to the critical fuel shortage. All fuel stations closed after municipal authorities ordered owners to sell a litre at a price not exceeding 15 South Sudanese pounds. Camilo says the purpose of the arrest and expulsions are to regulate fuel and ensure that every citizen has access to petrol.
We are trying to control this and to make the necessary arrangement that every citizen can have the access to the fuel.
Some Wau residents welcomed the expulsion of the three foreign nationals, accusing them of taking advantage of the current economic crisis in the country. Matthew Miskin, who works as radio programmer, says he left his home 15 kilometers from Wau to stay in town because he could no longer afford fuel for his motorbike. He commended municipal authorities for taking action against business owners who want to benefit from selling goods on the black market.
It is a good decision. This country has its own sovereignty, and those who used to come here, they come here to deliver our services. And in case they have fuel or they have the services and then they hide it from us, we are not happy with that one. They're supposed to sell it even though if it is expensive.
Cliff Akile, another Wau resident, says when a litre of fuel shot up to 200 South Sudanese pounds, he too parked his motorbike and chose to walk to work instead.
I am walking all this from home to work footing. And even my children, my kids, she have to come from home to school footing. And this will be very hard to her because she is still young. Now the price of the liter of the fuel is become 200. And if I buy this 200, what I will leave for my family at home?
A filling station owner who did not want to be identified says fuel station managers were instructed by the government to stop selling fuel to the public, but to reserve it for government institutions. He says those arrested probably were following those instructions so that ordinary citizens could get fuel from the black market. In Wau, many people who used to ride motorbikes have resorted to repairing their old bicycles to use for getting to and from work. Those who have no bicycles now walk long distances as public transport vehicles have largely been parked. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
From Wau, we go to Cameroon, where celebrations were held across the country today to commemorate President Paul Biya's 33 years in power. Opposition leaders are calling on Biya to consider stepping down when his current term ends in 2018. But there are no signs the 82-year-old president will step aside. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
President Paul Biya's supporters sing as they organize activities to celebrate his 33rd anniversary in power. Professor Jacques Famindongo, a frontline supporter of the octogenarian, says Biya's backers have a moral responsibility to celebrate their leader's successes, especially for the internal peace Cameroon enjoys. He says as they celebrate, they remember thousands who have either died or are suffering from the Boko Haram insurgency, which he says could have been terrible had Biya not declared war against the terrorists in the north of the country. He says people should join him in counting the blessings they have enjoyed from Biya's leadership.
suffit de mesurer à travers toute l'étendue du territoire l'ampleur des réalisations du renouveau national. Nous pouvons citer.
He says it suffices to look all over the national territory and people will see the achievements of BIA, schools, universities, health centers and hospitals, rural and urban electrification projects and drinkable water plants are some of the successes. He says BIA promotes development all over Cameroon without any favoritism and that the Cameroonian leader assures territorial integrity and rights and freedoms for everyone. But Cameroon's main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front, does not have such a rosy view of the long-time leader. Senior party official Alim Nambarga says they are using BIA's anniversary to ask him not to seek another term.
Il faut savoir qu'en 1982, le Cameroun était un pays émergent parce qu'avec un taux de croissance de 7%.
He says Cameroon had 7% economic growth in 1982 when Paul Biya became president and that the country was on a path to becoming an emerging economy like Brazil, China, Korea and Japan. But today, he says the economic growth rate has dropped to less than 3%. He says there is no democracy, no freedom of expression, falling moral standards and poor justice systems, and that Paul Biya has failed. Youth leader Clarice Yimgang is skeptical Biya will heed the call not to run again. She says Biya has not helped most Cameroonians because they remain jobless after completing their education.
When you go to our ministries, the secretaries and people who work there are people who were employed in the days, in the 80s. I don't think that the youth in this country really want to go through that kind of process anymore. They go to school with the view of getting jobs in other countries where education is valued.
Biya was prime minister for 7 years beginning in 1975, then became president following the resignation of the Central African State's first leader, Ahmadou Ahidjo. In 2008, he revised the 1996 constitution to remove presidential term limits, allowing him to contest and win the 2011 election. Biya is now serving the fourth year in his seven-year term. Asked earlier this year if he will be a candidate in 2018, Biya said, and I quote, "It is not he who wants, but he who can that will be able to lead Cameroon." Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And here in the United States, a South Sudanese American founded the Awil Youth Association to raise money to help build schools in South Sudan. He tells Ayen Bior that he wants to help young South Sudanese embrace their cultural identity.
Bolgai Deng says the primary mission of the Awil Youth Association is to build a society where everyone in South Sudan has access to education, medical care, food, and clean water. Deng, who hails from Awil, admits that's a lofty goal, but says it's important because school is the best place to experience South Sudanese culture, and when you learn it in your local language, it becomes as easy as 1+1.
Let's say that the math was explained in our own culture, that we understand that 1+1 is 2 in our own culture, be able to figure it out to make things easy for them. If you do that and you teach this kid, now it sounds difficult in English, but in English it doesn't sound hard. It's not that hard.
While many see enormous challenges in trying to encourage South Sudan's 64 tribes to live peacefully among each other, Deng says it can actually strengthen the country because South Sudanese can all learn from other cultures.
And we have to do that also, due respect to those other cultures who already have exist, their own language, and they know how to read and write. Like, actually, look, they have to write their own language. We have no adapter. So this is the thing that we can be able to do, adapt those ideas and based on their culture, due respect to our contribution, all of us, to our nation.
The Awil Youth Association, founded in 2012 in Richmond, Virginia, is raising money from American investors to build schools across South Sudan. Deng says they are planning to build at least 20 schools. Deng also says they are finalizing the curriculum, which will include South Sudan's rich history.
So we learned that how these people exist back then and how did they emerge to this world we're living in now. So we could go back and make sure that we acknowledge their culture. And then we can embrace their existence in that country and make sure that every one of them has a piece of contribution to the history of the South Sudan or to Sudan.
Deng says it is easier to understand subjects when they are based in your own culture. And he says understanding one's own history will help empower them to stand up for their own human rights.
Claiming your right, it based on also your history. It's not just about taking the gun and shoot everybody and saying everything is okay. Everything is not okay. If you don't have ideology, a philosophy that it can teach your own citizen and how they think and how they're going to look for the future, for the generation tomorrow, you actually you fail the mission in which you took arm for.
Deng says he wants to team up with other South Sudanese nonprofits, such as the Virginia-based Humanity Helping Sudan, in order to help make his goals a reality. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Donald Booth, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, says the two parties in South Sudan's conflict are responsible for implementing the IGAD Plus brokered peace deal. Booth says implementation of the deal depends on the willingness of both parties to fulfill their promise of restoring peace in the country. Booth tells South Sudan in Focus that he is surprised to hear that the rebels and the government want the international community to help pay for implementing the deal. He says the Kiir administration and the SPLM-IO have no excuse for delaying the implementation of the agreement they signed in August. South Sudan's information minister doesn't see it that way. He says the government and SPLM-IO don't have the money to implement the deal, and since the IGAD Plus partners brokered the deal, they should help pay for it. Michael McQuay says the government is drafting a budget to determine how much money is needed to fund implementation of the agreement. McQuay was speaking after representatives for the government and the SPLM-IO agreed to security arrangements in Addis Ababa earlier this week. And finally, the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, arrived in Juba last night. Festus Mohai, who is also the former president of Botswana, says he plans to meet with President Kiir as well as other stakeholders to the peace agreement while in the capital. Upon his arrival at Juba International Airport, Mohai greeted the people of South Sudan with the message, "Peace unto you, even though I am not Jesus Christ." He said, "With peace, everybody is a winner." JMEC was set up under Chapter 7 of the peace agreement and is responsible for overseeing and monitoring all aspects of the implementation of the peace agreement signed in August. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bandito by Emmanuel Camilo.
Ndakateba kontang nangai tiwana teno yo bandito ninde. Ndakateba kontang nanga banga wano teno yo bandito ninde. Modi wello di sine bivanga. Modi wello di sine birunga. Modi wello di sine bota. Modi wello kere neri kai gano me. Ndakaba matino ni ninde. Modi wello kere neri tai gano me. Dakapa matino ni ninde.
Ani da ngo tamru ngo tarango no.
Dene no sono ti de kada o tapano.
Anga soy ni medita eze wi.
My vi. Na de no pinga da o tapindi funo badir yo no. Ai tuta ki tito tale no bandito. Duta matani no donze ti a tindo no so. Nita mar boneta nzambo nita zeyi nita zebo. Disaida wi talevo. Kei bo bidu novo. Dipiti kalombo tiru tizo zuru naso. Nazangwe ya bi kambe del bada wude kata soko. Na tel papu del bambe na telo bibi na bo. Dizono atono libo ni tawali tando bo. Miti delo te yelwo veni no kabandi fo. Dizono ako kumrata doti ziyendu na so.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Camilo rapping that song Bandito in his native Balanda language from Western Bahr El Ghazal State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh, wow.